Hi, I'm Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
In what may be the most unusual diet you've ever heard of, Derek Dellinger ate nothing but fermented food for an entire year. He cleared out his cabinets and refrigerator and filled them with an array of new foods. And in a book called The Fermented Man, A Year on the Front Line of Food Revolution, Mr. Dellinger describes his life as he searched the globe for the most extreme and most delicious foods the world of fermentation has to offer, from cheese to shark meat. It's published by Overlook, and I'm very pleased to have brought Derek Dellinger to our show today. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
There are a lot of unusual diets out there. There are pescatarians and fruitarians, even kangatarians in Australia, but just fermented food. Do you know anyone else who's done this before?
I don't know. I may be the first. I mean, I'm sure there's someone in a period of history that lived off of nothing but maybe bread and beer for a period, but I don't know of anyone that lived off of only fermented food for an entire year.
You've worked at brewing beer. Was that what got you started, or was it a jar of sauerkraut?
Well, both things, actually. I did get started as a home brewer, brewing beer and getting into wild fermentations through that, through using wild cultures of yeast and bacteria to create these really funky, kind of sour, tart beers. That it's a really fun experiment. It's a great hobby to do at home because there's so many possibilities and so many things you can try. And I'd been getting into wild fermentation through that. And shopping one day, I had this light bulb moment when I picked up a jar of sauerkraut that was unlike the sauerkraut that I, you know, ate at county fairs growing up. It was live culture. It was advertising the bacteria that was in it. I'd never seen anything like that before, and I thought it was kind of, you know, fascinating and then mind-blowing as I started to realize how many other foods were connected by the same bacteria.
How many different things will create fermentation? You mentioned yeast. You mentioned bacteria. Yeast are not bacteria.
Right, yeah. So yeast and bacteria, there's a lot of mold-based ferments, particularly in Eastern cultures that can create some very exotic foods.
And cheeses.
Cheese, yeah, which, right, can be something. I mean, some of these wilder fermentations, some of these really complex fermentations are all of these microbes. So bacteria, yeast, molds, everything gets involved, and it's this incredibly complex ecosystem.
Is there a difference between fermenting and pickling?
There is, and it's something that's, I don't think, very well understood right now, and something that obviously I was trying to kind of highlight in The Fermented Man, how poorly understood fermentation is, because pickling, the type of pickles you typically find are made through pasteurizing them with boiling vinegar, which kills all the microbes on the pickles, rather than preserving them through microbial life, which is what fermentation is.
Well, we don't want them to spoil, and we'll get into the whole matter of spoilage in just a moment.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a big question with fermentation is, you know, where do you draw the line between rot from microbial action and preservation through microbial action?
What did you hope to achieve by eating so many sour and odd-tasting foods?
I mean, it's something that probably has never quite been done before, at least not in this way. I didn't know what to expect, and I was very curious, you know, what sort of health consequences or benefits I might gain from it. And I was also just really, I thought this was a really cool way. The Fermented Man project would be a really good way to help educate people on what fermentation is, because it's a field of knowledge that's very disconnected right now. And a lot of people don't realize how all these separate, varied, and incredibly unique fermented foods that encompass almost everything that we eat, almost every type of food that we eat, they don't realize that fermentation is the thing that's connecting them. And so by doing this for a year and by kind of going to a crazy extreme and making a sort of fun meta diet out of it, I, you know, hope to be able to educate people on how these are all connected.
When you cleared out your pantries and refrigerator and left only fermented foods, what was left?
At the time, I mean, I had a couple batches of fermented vegetables going that I fortunately started this big fermentation session a few weeks before I started the diet.
But really, with the idea that you were going to do the diet?
With the idea that I was going to do the diet. I mean, I knew that I was going to do the diet for probably half a year or so before I began it. So I made a big push to ferment everything that I could think of about a month before I started it, thinking, you know, starting to think about what I was going to eat and how I was going to live off of this stuff. And even that kind of threw me, because I fermented all these veggies, and then I very quickly realized how few calories are in a jar of sauerkraut, and that you can't actually live off of just sauerkraut. So I really had to question, you know, what else was in my fridge, the cheeses, the cured meats, the, you know, where can I get good bread, and all the things that were giving me the calories that I lived off of.
Are most breads fermented on some level?
Yeah. So, I mean, the weird thing with bread is even Wonder Bread is technically fermented, even though you'd think it's, you know, kind of the cheap, not really high quality bread. Even Wonder Bread undergoes, you know, a few hours of fermentation. It rises through the action of yeast. So all bread, or all leavened breads, you know, any bread that employs yeast to rise. And there are other
ways.
So
not matzah.
Right. So like soda bread that rises through a chemical transformation isn't fermented. But if it rises through yeast, then it is some degree of fermented, but there's different degrees of fermentation.
Since cheese has protein, you could have lived off of grilled cheese sandwiches for a year?
I certainly could have, and probably pretty much almost did, as far as my caloric intake went.
You call fermentation the cold secret fire.
Yeah, it's...
What did you mean by that?
So when you watch fermentation happening, it's an incredible sight, especially in a big open container. It looks like it's boiling. It looks like it's a liquid, especially, you know, in liquid ferments like beer, different fermented beverages, and even in a jar of sauerkraut or even a jar of pickles. It's just this very active, live thing that you're seeing. You can tell it's alive. It looks like it's boiling, but it's not actually boiling. It's not hot. It's like this cold fire, and that's kind of the root of the concept and the term fermentation.
And then would you ever look at it under a microscope?
Well, I'm not as much of a scientist myself, so I never really, I wasn't examining the exact bacterial content of every batch of pickles that I made. at one point, you know, getting into beer and everything, you start to get more into plating different microbes and streaking bacteria and quality control there. But I had to focus more on the practical, and it's a great hobby because you don't need a microscope to do it. You don't need to be a scientist. You don't need to get that technical. You can just make this stuff the same way that, you know, our ancestors did for thousands of years, and they didn't have these, you know, advanced scientific pieces of equipment.
That's because of the answer you gave to a friend who asked you, you mentioned this early in the book, does fermentation happen just on its own, I mean in nature?
It does. I mean, even animals are attracted to overripe fruit that has begun to ferment, and animals sometimes get a buzz off of fruit that's started to create alcohol through fermentation. So very likely fermentation was discovered because someone left something outside, and it requires an anaerobic environment for proper fermentation, so free of oxygen. So barley or fruit or a honey wine or something that was rich in sugars probably pooled in a crack somewhere and began to ferment, and that's probably how someone discovered it in the first place.
My guest is Derek Dellinger. His book, The Fermented Man, A Year on the Front Lines of a Food Revolution. You're calling it a food revolution? Don't you need other adherents to have a revolution?
Well, I don't know that my diet itself is the food revolution. I would say my diet itself is not the food revolution, because I'm not advocating anyone else eat nothing but fermented food. But fermentation itself is a food revolution, I think, in the sense that it's being rediscovered now. I mean, it's always been with us. It's been with human society forever, but we're reconnecting with it now in a very important way.
But there's a bit of a confusion area. For example, you mentioned beer. Is beer still malt, hops, and oats, or is it some other fermented thing? Is kimchi cabbage, or is it something else?
I mean, they're complex. Kimchi can be a number of different things. There's hundreds of kimchi recipes practiced all throughout Korea, and beer can be, I mean, the basis of beer is barley, hops, water, and yeast, but most fermented foods and liquids are incredibly versatile, and you can shape them in almost any direction by, you know, adding in and experimenting with all sorts of ingredients.
Some fermented foods, like the Icelandic delicacy of fermented shark meat, is described as tasting rotten. Why would someone want to eat something that tastes rotten?
That's a great question, and something that I asked the Icelanders that I met. You know, do you guys really enjoy this stuff? I went there to try this. It's called hakarl, which I'm probably not even pronouncing correctly, but rotten shark meat. And it's one of the most pungent foods in the world.
But the only way you can eat shark meat, that part of shark meat, is if it is fermented?
Correct, yeah. Fermentation is, you know, one of the benefits is it's great for pre-digesting the food and making it more more nutritious and more easily digested by humans. And in this case, often, you know, fermentation removes toxins or poisons that, that the body can't handle at all. So this shark is highly poisonous. If you don't ferment it, if you just eat it raw, you'll be poisoned and might die. So the only way the ancient Icelanders could eat this shark meat and presumably survive off this type of meat was by fermenting it. So they originally had no choice, and it evolved into this kind of national delicacy.
Well, where do you draw the line between something that is fermented and something that's rotten to the point where it's spoiled? I know a lot of people who are very pleased when they see a mold form on a cheese, and they just cut off the mold and then they eat the rest of the cheese, and others who feel the cheese has been spoiled.
Right, absolutely. It's a spectrum. I mean, there's probably no way to draw a clear-cut line where fermentation ends and rot begins, because, you know, even with many fermented foods, depending how you prepare them, depending what you do with them once they're done fermenting, if you let a jar of sauerkraut sit out, eventually it will also rot. It's this microbial battle between thousands, millions of different microbes competing for resources. So you're kind of forming alliance with certain microbes in the act of fermentation for the sake of warding off the pathogenic or the bad bacteria, and hoping the good ones, you know, if you do it right, they'll preserve the food for, you know, as long as you need it to be preserved to eat it.
If you see some white stuff on a strawberry, doesn't that mean that it's rotting?
Well, if it's mold,
should I eat it?
Yeah, I mean, this tends to get instinctual, where you kind of have an innate sense of when a food is still okay to eat and when it's not, and that's part of why restoring our knowledge of fermentation is so important, because we're starting to lose this sense of when something's good and when something's bad. And you when you see mold, you know what mold is, and you feel instinctually that you should cut it off and not eat it. But if you see a properly fermented food, your senses should tell you, oh, this is good for me to eat.
Is it revealing that there's never been a recorded case of someone dying because of fermented food?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it's important to understand that, like, with that instinct, with eating fermented foods versus things that are rotting, it's completely safe to eat fermented foods and to drink fermented drinks. No pathogens can survive in a properly fermented product. So, yeah, there has been no recorded case of a death from a fermented vegetable.
What about its impact on our digestive system? If you drink a lot of beer, you get bloated, you get gassy.
Right.
Does this food make you gassy?
No, it doesn't. I mean, not in my experience. And everyone's microbiome, everyone's gut is different, of course. And, you know, for many people, fermentation can be a really vital part of restoring balance to their gut and their microbiome. But these foods are pre-digested by microbes. They're actually easier for us to digest. And, you know, what you're talking about, that often comes from foods that our bodies are struggling to process and digest. And that's, you know, that's where the flatulence comes from. These foods are easier for us to process.
Well, many people, when they write books of this sort, are suggesting that this is the future, this is a cure-all. You're not suggesting that fermented foods are a cure-all.
Right.
So what do they give us other than, in your case, you say you're less afraid of your food?
They are an important part of, you know, maintaining, I think, balance in our gut and what we eat. It's not a miracle cure-all. I mean, as radical as this diet was, I went so far to the extreme to illustrate and normalize fermented foods. It's something that we, you know, shouldn't fear. This the war on germs that we've been waging is unhealthy. We pump everything full of antibiotics, and that's not sustainable over the long term. We need to reevaluate how we see the microbial world and realize that microbes play a huge part of how our body functions and our health. So we need to normalize them, normalize our relationship with them, and restore them to our diets.
What was your first fermented meal, and what was your last one?
My first fermented meal, January 1st, when I started The Fermented Man, was pretty simple and pretty indicative of what I ate the rest of the year. I just had a very simple platter And this whole year I ate very simply, tended to eat foods in their kind of basic form. I just had cheese and bread and cultured butter. I think I had some yogurt and some kind of like fermented smoothie that I concocted. And then my last meal, actually, I don't even remember what my last meal was, because at that point I think I was so fried and I was focused on hunting down this rotten shark meat. And I returned from this epic Icelandic adventure that was really like an incredibly fitting finale to this, what was an incredibly challenging year. It was very difficult. And by the end, I had gotten through this rotten shark meat and I was ready to dive into a bowl of guacamole when the clock turned to midnight.
Did you ever slip up?
I did one time eat a hard-boiled egg that I was fermenting a bunch of hard-boiled eggs, and I started the batch way too late. It was like 3 in the morning, and I was just burnt out and tired and like, oh, I gotta ferment these eggs. I was throwing them in like a kombucha beet kind of hybrid sort of pickle thing, and I just butchered the one egg and I just popped it in my mouth without thinking. But I think that's the only time I kind of...
And you didn't feel guilty?
I felt terribly guilty. I was like looking around my kitchen to see if anyone was spying on me and caught me cheating.
There are a lot of fermented things in Asian food. The Chinese, in fact, take eggs and ferment them for long periods and it winds up tasting like cheese. And then, of course, there's kimchi. And at the end of the book, you include recipes, including kimchi sourdough pancakes.
Yeah, it's amazing what you get. I mean, kimchi is incredibly versatile. Sourdough, which I never got to be a very good baker, and which is why I have very strong opinions about bread and the quality of bread. But I'm a terrible baker myself, so I used all the sourdough culture in unique ways in pancakes and ferment other beverages. It's incredibly versatile what you can do with even just one fermented culture.
So even though you're off the diet, are you still eating a lot of fermented food?
I still am, yeah. I make a lot of simple veggie ferments throughout the summer and fall. Still making sauerkraut on the regular. Still making one of my favorite ferments was a kind of a carrot parsnip ginger ferment. I just made a new batch of... And even simple things, like there's so many veggies that are so easy to ferment, you barely feel like you did anything. I mean, the other day I made a new batch of fermented cherry tomatoes where all you have to do is dump some cherry tomatoes in a mason jar with salt and pour water on top to create that anaerobic environment, the brine, the salt brine. And you put a jar, or they put the lid loosely on the jar and let it sit for a few days and it ferments. And that's how easy it is. A lot of times you feel like you've hardly done anything at all because the fermentation is happening on its own, and that's what's so cool about it is that these microbes exist on these vegetables innately and just take off on their own.
Unfortunately, there are no fermented cupcakes. That which was one of your you personal could, favorites.
Yeah.
Derek Dellinger is the brewmaster at Kent Falls Brewing Company, and that's in Connecticut?
In Kent, Connecticut, yep.
And... he has written a book called The Fermented Man, A Year on the Front Lines of a Food Revolution. It's published by Overlook. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.